Welcome to Caregiver SOS On Air, presented by the WellMed Charitable Foundation, with nationally known gerontologist Carol Zerniel and award-winning veteran broadcaster Ron Aaron. This program provides health, wellness, and other information for caregivers who are vital to the health and well-being of so many people across our country. And now, here are your hosts, Ron Aaron and Carol Zerniel.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to Caregiver SOS On Air. I'm Ron Aaron. Delighted to have you with us. Our co-host, Carol Zerniel, is here as well. Carol holds a master's degree in social gerontology with 30 years of experience in the field. She's the co-chair of the RAISE National Council on Caregiving and executive director of the WellMed Charitable Foundation. Carol, a great topic, and you mentioned off the air as we met our guest, this is something we really never talk about, the invisible caregiver and adolescents.
Well, and that's really it. A large number of young people are serving as caregivers, and they are underrecognized, and we certainly have not talked about adolescent caregivers on the show, and so I'm really happy to have this topic today.
Well, let me take a moment and introduce our guest, Dr. Bashir Easter. He's the founder of Melanin Minded LLC and Melanin Minded Foundation. The organization was established with the mission to be the bridge for information, service, and support for people of color with the long-term vision to empower and equip people of color to have the optimal quality of life. Dr. Easter earned his PhD from Capella University, an MBA from Concordia University, and a BS from Cardinal Stitch University. He also received an Associate of Science degree in Business Management from the Milwaukee Area Technical College. And Dr. Bashir Easter, thanks for joining us on Caregiver SOS On Air.
Thank you, Ron, and thank you, Carol. And you heard my background. I got a lot of business background. Why am I talking about Alzheimer's and dementia, right?
That's my question. What got you
involved? Great, great question. We don't even have to ask you the question. You already figured it out.
No, I do
that all the time.
Yeah, so I do it all the time. It fell in my lap. As most of us who are providing care for a loved one, it fell in my lap with my mother. She was actually diagnosed with just dementia at the age of 55 and was showing signs at the age of 50. And so I was in the process of going to school to focus on business, right? I was actually in more of the sector to be able to help companies and stuff like that. And then this disease fell into our lap and we didn't know what to do. As many of your listeners and people, we already know we're in the boat of what do we do next? And so the doctor didn't explain to us the type of dementia my mother had. He did not connect us to resources, service, and support. And so we struggled for 6 years trying to figure out how to provide this best care for our mother, which led me down this path on understanding there's more people that went down the same road that I went to and they needed help. And so that's what we started Melanin Minded.
How did you get answers?
So the process really led into I was working in child welfare because I did want to move into more of social services, that type of focus. And so I started working for child welfare. Child welfare, that was hard, y'all. 2 years of that. You know, 2 years of that is a whole different world. I tip my hat off to anybody that has continued in that path. But then I was looking for something else. And then I started finding out, they called me, was the Department on Aging in Milwaukee. And I found my passion with seniors. I was an elder abuse investigator. But when I walked in there, when I say 6 years, you all, 6 years, we were providing care of doing it all wrong. I didn't know there was anything out there. When I started working for the Department on Aging, I got extremely pissed because that's when I started learning about all these resources. Respite care dollars. I was an elder abuse investigator. I started seeing people in crisis and all the help that was out there. And I was like, well, how come this didn't get to us? How come did we struggle? So when I learned about those services, the state of Wisconsin started moving towards what they call the dementia redesign for the state. And I became the dementia care specialist for that. That's when I started learning about the prevalence rate of African-Americans being 2 times higher, being impacted, Latinos 1.5 times higher. Then I started learning about all of the ways that you can actually provide the help to have a better quality of life. But then there was some things that I call red tape. So that's when I started my own company to be able to focus on in that process of caring for my mom. I started noticing certain things that weren't talked about. And that's to youth. So that's what led me into my doctor because I wanted to find out what were the experiences of youth. And that's how I found that out was from my nieces and nephews. They were three, my youngest niece, my middle nephew, my older nephew, all had different things they were doing providing care. And what that looked like was my youngest niece, she was 9 years old, you all. She was giving my mother's insulin injections. She was checking her sugar level, 9. My older nephew, he was picking my mother up, taking her where she needed to go, changing her and stuff like that. But my middle nephew, he rejected it. He was just like, I don't want to do this. And why are you providing this care? It's because my sister didn't have any of the services coming in. It was just family. And so somebody had to do it. It had to be family. And in that understanding, I started watching their experiences. And so I did my research and I found out a lot about these invisible caregivers.
Well, you know, as someone who does sit on the RACE committee that is advising the Health and Human Services Administration, President Biden, on caregiving issues, we've been talking about that issue. What is it, if you could say, we have to have, this has to change in the world of dementia care, and particularly for our younger caregivers, what would you like to say to us?
So this is what I found out, Carol. These youth, I did my research, and these youth, it wasn't anything that was, as I started digging, to try to find out where is this at. And what I noticed that in the UK, they already focus on you. They focus on them and call them carers. So they actually bring these services to them. They listen to them. They have this focus. So I brought that concept to Milwaukee and to the U.S. It's called the Bridge Youth Program is what I created. It's culturally tailored and age-appropriate training. And so what it was is to hear what they went through. When I did my research, these youth were having PTSD. They were having depression, but they also have resiliency. What they needed was education. But they needed to know what dementia is and what it isn't. What is Alzheimer's disease? What is frontal temporal? How is it this person doesn't remember my name, right? We had to bring things directly to them to understand what they see on a developmental level. So what we understand is that age group, as we all know, as teens, it was 14 to 17 was the group. We're not thinking about caregiving. We're thinking about going out with our friends. We're thinking about what is our identity. If I should wear this, are they going to say something about me? I'm learning my life of who I am through basketball, through sports, right? Through other things besides now I'm doing something which is considered an unnatural stress. But we are, as the aging boomer population, as we talk about, we need more support for family. So we are having our youth providing this care, but they don't see themselves as caregivers. We all don't.
Let's pick this up in a moment, but I want to let folks know who may have just joined us. You're listening to Caregiver SOS On Air. I'm Ron Aaron, along with our co-host, Carol Zernial, and Dr. Bashir Easter is with us. We're talking about caregiving in the African-American community, and especially looking at youth, adolescents who are providing those care, the invisible caregivers. And as you think about this, Dr. Easter, is there any way to know how many people we're talking about who are delivering this kind of care? In your family alone, as I listen to you, you're talking 6, 7, 8 people.
Yes, it's the whole family. Everyone is providing care. Like I was saying, they're not thinking about a caregiver. They're just sitting with their grandmother, with their grandfather, with their uncle. But these individuals, as we all know, have these behaviors, the things that they're going through as they're trying to learn through a life with a rerouted brain. And these kids are like, I don't know why they don't remember my name. Why are they having these outbursts? Why are they wandering? And then they're leading for their family to explain to them this. And their family has really no clue what the disease is and isn't. And what it looks like. So now they're filling in the gaps at this age group of developmental level. And then these gaps they're filling in is not right, is incorrect. So Carol, back to what you're saying is we need more culturally and age appropriate training, their age group, bringing that information to them. And then what we also do is we talk about self-care and we bring in a program called Dementia Live, and that we bring that to them as well to understand what the experience of that individual or what they're going through. And then we allow them to have a voice. Tell me what you're experiencing. Tell me what you're noticing about your loved one. And that's where the resiliency comes from, because now they have a voice to say, hey, I'm in here too, you all, right? I may not call myself a caregiver, but I am doing something to be able to help my family.
Well, one of the things that really resonated with me was talking about where they are in their developmental stage, the teenagers, because that's a really chaotic time internally, right? Figuring out who you are, deciding who you're going to be, and just navigating social media, much less the school relationships. And then adding on to that, that whole experience with someone with dementia, you know, I can see full overload. And we don't have a lot of age-appropriate training. We don't have a level of training that says this is what's normal, what's not normal, what you could expect so that you don't develop PTSD from somebody who's acting very strangely.
So, Ron, you go to what you were saying is what are the numbers, right? We says in 2018, there was 5.4 million individuals that were listed to be impacted by this disease, right? So if you talk that number and that's to increase, we're already in 2024 and it's going to increase to more. Just imagine how many family members are providing this care. Not, we're talking about one person diagnosed and every other, all the family members are impacted, even friends. And so with that age appropriate piece, understanding that what I learned from some of the youth is they're going to provide this care because they're a part of the family, right? It is a loved one. It's expected for them to be able to sit with them and to be a part of them, right? And they think it's normal aging. It's not. And I learned from one individual when I was doing my research of her, she talked about her school life, right? That was her identity. Good grades. She was really focusing on preparing herself for college. And she had to sit with her grandfather because her mother had to work. So she's sitting with them and helping him. But one day he was agitated. And it got to the point where she was doing studying. She had a big test the next day. She told me about this. And she said, I got in, did the test, and didn't do well. So it impacted my grade. So I went back to the teacher to say, hey, can I retake the test? And they said no. She says, it hurt me so bad because I know this impacted me. The biggest thing that bothered me is that I couldn't tell my teacher that I was up all night taking care of my grandfather, right? Because she didn't know she could. She didn't know they would listen. She didn't know if that was something. So we talk about the schools. There are a lot of kids that are not asleep in school because they are just acting up or just out all night or just playing video games. We have a lot of youth that are caregivers and they're exhausted. So giving them a voice helps them.
Well, when we come back from the break, I would love to hear where the entry points are to reach adolescent caregivers. So how do we find them and how do we help them?
And we'll talk about that in a moment. I'm Ron Aaron, along with our co-host, Carol Zernial. A fascinating discussion with Dr. Bashir Easter. Delighted to have him with us, and we will be with you in a moment. You're listening to Caregiver SOS On Air. Well, thank you so much for listening to Caregiver SOS On Air. We're delighted to have you with us. We come to you every week with a discussion of an issue, a problem, some accomplishments involved in caregiving with more than 60 million caregivers across this country, but most thinking they are the Lone Rangers. We try to bring you the latest information and help that can make that job easier and more manageable. Caregiver SOS On Air takes a look at trends across this country. We provide tips on how to be a better caregiver, and most importantly, where you can go for help. On Caregiver SOS On Air, we try to give you what you need to make that caregiving manageable and to provide you with the help that can make your life easier. I'm Ron Aaron. Carol Zernial and I are delighted to co-host this program, and we're thrilled you've joined us on the award-winning Caregiver SOS On Air podcast, available everywhere, brought to you by WellMed Charitable Foundation.
Hello, friend.
Hello, friend.
Really good to see you once again. Hello, friend.
Hello, friend.
Really good to see you once again.
Well, we are so pleased you are with us here on the award-winning Caregiver SOS On Air. We come to you weekly with a discussion of a variety of issues involving caregiving and care recipients. Our podcast available wherever you get your podcast. Just look for Caregiver SOS On Air, and we are also on the radio in a number of different markets. We're talking with Dr. Bashir Easter, talking about a really important topic, the invisible caregivers. And Carol, you had a great question.
Well, you know, one of the things working with older adults and adult caregivers, we often connect with them through the medical community, through the clinics, through the healthcare system. But where would we connect? What's the best place to meet and connect with adolescent caregivers who may not be going to the medical appointments during the day while they're in school?
You're absolutely right. How I found them is finding out who were the caregivers originally, the mother, the father, the husband, the wife. When I find out who they are and have the conversation with them, I usually just ask them, do you have any youth in your home? Do you have any nieces, nephews, sons, daughters, you know, cousins or anybody in your home? Well, yeah. Do they interact with your loved one that's living with the disease? Well, absolutely. We're their caregivers. So and usually, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask if the faith-based community is someplace to go or schools. If, you know, do people want to speak up at school where their peers are, or would they be more comfortable in a faith-based setting?
So it could be both. So what we're trying to find out, since this is a newer thing, it really is, right? Because no one's talking to the youth. So we're trying to find out where the people are. The youth are not saying, I'm a caregiver. They're not raising their hand. They're not in the school saying it. So the faith base is where we're starting that dementia-friendly community in our Milwaukee, Atlanta, and the Dallas area, those components. And in that is where we find the people providing care so we can ask the question, Carol. Because interesting enough, the families don't even recognize the youth as caregivers either.
It's so hard to get caregivers to identify as caregivers at any age. And I can imagine if you're a youth, you're even less likely.
They're not. And so with the families, we asked them, do you have your sons and daughters or anyone sitting or doing anything for that, for helping in your home? Well, yes, we do. So then we introduce this to them, and that's how we bring them out. And so that's how we talk to them. So they're everywhere. They can be in the hospital. They can be at the clinic. They can be at the churches. They can be at the schools. We're trying to identify them first and then find out where they are. But majority, faith-based is one major component that we're focusing on to reach that group. And then we're allowing them to have a voice to then speak out. I know you did a great interview with Dr. Faywan Epps, right? And so the youth are actually going to be able to have their first time at the Altar Summit to be able to talk about their experience. So they'll be there in Atlanta.
So what other services are you providing? And the backwards way of asking that is, go back in time, what would you have liked now that you know more about what's available when you were providing as an adolescent help for your relatives?
Yes, Ron. So the biggest thing was I wish someone would have told me there were resources. I wish someone would have had, like, the things that you're doing right now, this radio podcast, right? The different things from the doctor's point of view to say, hey, I may not have a cure. I may have some medication that can help, but let me connect you to the social worker team to get you connected to what's going on locally in your community. I want you to understand the timeline. This was 18 years ago. So the timeline of that, of 18 years ago, is I know we moved forward with a lot more information and help and resources. And so I can't put everything on that doctor. Right. But what I can say is there is some doctors that are not giving this information. All right. Or don't know what to do. So this is the type of community and conversation to say there is help out there. Here's some of these resources. So some of those things is understanding of if you're providing care for your loved one, so are anyone else that's in your home. So then these people are your nieces, nephews, sons, daughters. They're providing care. And what you need to do is we need to educate you on how to know what type of dementia your loved one has. And then also understand that all behavior is communication, because we were struggling trying to figure out why mom was doing things in those capacities. And if we would have understood that she didn't have Alzheimer's disease because they didn't tell us the type, she had frontal temporal dementia, we would have treated her and actually understood better how to provide better care.
Yeah, that's something that the FTD diagnosis is something we're seeing more of now. Back 18 years ago, so obscure. I mean, it's still difficult, but so obscure. And now people go, oh, Bruce Willis, you know, has FTD and totally different behavior pattern.
We've done several programs on FTD. It is always very powerful and very depressing.
Yeah, that was it. That's one of the ways we always say it's one of the worst things we can have. You know, we deal with a lot of different issues, and FTD is absolutely right up there in the top of the list of some of the most difficult conditions to deal with.
Very difficult. And the thing was, hindsight is 2020, you all. But you know what it also brings to us? A lot of guilt. It brings a lot of guilt to us as a caregiver because we didn't understand our mother.
You didn't do it. Yeah, you didn't. You weren't. Yeah. And I can totally see that, where you were doing the best you could, but you would have done something totally different, totally different. So I hope you all, the whole family, just lets that go, because that was a tough, tough, tough situation for 18 years ago.
And of course, what you're doing now in many ways makes up for that.
Absolutely. Well, we say now it's a her test, Dolores Pitts, I say her name. Her test led me to what I'm doing now, is now a testimony. And I'm getting to be on your show, really pushing me to do this with the youth. But to be able to talk about this now, I'm able to celebrate her with her difficulties that she went through. We learned from it. So I'm able to teach people to say, this is what you need to know right now and to provide better care.
And how do people find out more about what you're doing?
So they can go to melaninmindedllc.com. That's our website that you can go to. Or I even tell anyone to call me. It's so funny that I put my number out there. I do. But it's 414-234-8160, because we have a lot of different services that we're providing. One of it actually being a dementia-capable transportation service. It's called My Melanin Now. It's just like our regular rideshare service, but we focus on individuals with the early stages of the disease, seniors and people with limited disabilities. And what we do is we take them back to where they stepped away from. Barbershops, grocery stores, you know, back to church. And these things are to be able to say, hey, they can have a quality of life while they're living through it, to reduce that stigma in our African-American Latino community. So these are the services that we did. We did a 3-month pilot, went very well. Now we're expanding to other states to use this service to get people back in to help talk about what's going on with them.
Give us the phone number again. You get to do it twice on the radio.
All right, I'll take it. 414 234-8160. And if they call me, you know, or text me, I take either one, and then I can tell them what the services are. And then if they're not in the certain state that we're in, we're doing different, we do them in pilots to different communities.
Well, let me ask this question. Are you still affiliated with the Council on Aging in Milwaukee?
So I work with Milwaukee County Department of Health and Human Services. We also focus on the state of Wisconsin services as well. So I have not been at the Council of Aging at this point.
Okay. So the reason I'm asking the question is, as a former Area Agency on Aging director and in that system of the state services, Wisconsin does better than a lot of states. Do they know about younger caregivers? Are they prepared for those questions?
Not yet. And so the goal is, Carol, this conversation has really been led into what we doing about it, and then also what my research was. My goal is to continue to push. We went to Advocacy Day at the Alzheimer's Association, did Advocacy Day at the Capitol. They went last year, right? They didn't go this year, right? And so we're trying to make sure that they keep getting invited, that people keep getting their spaces, and that this is continued to push because it's so new, right? And so then the other focus is what are we doing about it? So we actually graduated 2 cohorts already through the program. And so we are looking for funding. That's where the foundation component of it is. We're looking at funding to help us in the process to continue to graduate more youth, bring this into the school system is the other piece that we're doing, or even Job Corps has been some conversation that we can work with as well, because they get certified. They get certified and paid. So that's what we're trying to make sure that there's more discussion, more help in that, because that's our next generation. But the other thing that we're adding with their youth, it's actually they're moving into more workforce development and they're adding to their life skills. So some of those youth look at being hired in civil service, the medical field, doctors, and all of that as well, because they're introduced to, now I can do something early in my life to make a change and a difference.
Well, I think you're going to have to clone yourself. He's going to have to clone himself, right, to be able to accomplish all of these ideas that you have.
Yeah.
We need a lot more Dr. Easters.
Yeah, we're going to keep moving. Again, I can't do it alone. That's why this is such a great platform to let people know is connect with me. We can build this in these pilots and build them, and sustainable is the other component that we want to make sure. It's a sustainable model.
So what is your fantasy for all this? You said you're looking to go national. You're expanding into other states. What's your dream?
I'm going to say this to you all very, very, you know, from my heart. I'm building it just in case I need it. Just in case I need the services, I'm going to build it so everyone else can get it as well. I use the term, let them bowl. That's what I use. It's like, we don't want to stop individuals that are living with the disease just to be isolated, or, you know, the family's not knowing what to do. We want to say, let them bowl, but put the rails up. Let them have a quality of life so we can understand it to the cure and treatment. And so I am building it as fast as I can, just in case that I may have to get and use these services as well. So that's my overall goal, is to be able to make sure that everyone has a quality of life and understand that this is not something that they have to have a doom and gloom to, right? There is going to be a cure. I believe it. There will be. But in the meantime, what can we do while the people are still walking through this process and able to advocate them for themselves and their family? That's my
goal. How do you make that happen?
What we're doing right now, right? The first thing is, when I started understanding the certain individuals and these gaps that were there, we started filling the gaps. So the Navigator Transportation was a gap. We got the numbers from the DMV. The DMV told us that 400 individuals had their licenses revoked and removed because of mild cognitive impairment, you know, of Alzheimer's disease and related dementias. But then they took the keys away, and then what? So I'm not transportation, you all. I'll tell you right now. I did not go to school for transportation. I was not. But I understood no one was focusing on that group. So I said, okay, well, let's go ahead and do this. So that's how it started with the Avinet, right? We got some support from Wisconsin. It's called Project Pitchit. We won 2021. We were the Project Pitchit winners. We won that. And so we were able to season seven of Project Pitchit. So they gave us funding that helped us move this forward. And so we've been able to still go with that. So that was a gap. The youth are considered what? A gap. So I didn't know any other places that was doing it. I only learned it from the UK. The UK was doing this work, and I realized they weren't doing this in the US. So I just started. When we start talking about navigating coaching, people were being handheld. We had to walk people through, because of my experience, we couldn't just be handed something. We needed to be walked through. And then the men's health. We understand that men are caregivers, y'all. We provide care. And so understand that as we provide care, we have our own health issues that we don't talk about individually. And so that's what we focus on with those four pillars that we do.
I got to stop you right there, Dr. Easter. We're going to get you back for sure. We really appreciate you coming on. Very quickly, what's your website again?
It's melaninmindedllc.com, and you can reach me again at 414-234-8160 if you're interested to learn more.
Thank you so much. For Carol Zernial, I'm Ron Aaron. Thanks for joining us today on the award-winning Caregiver SOS On Air. Executive producers for Caregiver SOS On Air are Carol Zernial and Ron Aaron. Our associate producer is Christy Romero. I'm Ron Aaron. We'll see you next week on Caregiver SOS On Air.
You've been listening to Caregiver SOS On Air, an exclusive presentation of the WellMed Charitable Foundation. We welcome emails with suggestions and comments on this program at radio@wellmed.net. Join co-hosts Carol Zernial and Ron Aaron next week for more on caregiving, improving the health and well-being of caregivers and their care recipients everywhere. For more on caregiving and podcasts of our programs, visit caregiversos.org.